Hello. Welcome to recording number 9 of Gary Gygax's Saga of Old City, an annotated recording. All right. Well, I'm going to take up where I left off, and that is on page number 63, paragraph 4. He passed several open but dark doorways before the glow from a flickering lamp within one room allowed him to determine what was happening. The bloody truth was there before his eyes. Jenk lay on the floor of his room in a pool of congealing gore. His corpse was covered with wounds, and his throat was cut. He had been the first of the masters, and the first renegade thief to enlist with the beggar master. Break. One of the things that we have the Jenk who is named, but it strikes me that here he's being called the first of the renegade thieves. And I had believed earlier that there is mention that all of the renegade thieves who had enlisted with the beggar master had disappeared. This is the first mention of Jenk, and it seems more that Fergo would have been the first of the masters, and I believe this is the first mention of Jenk at all. So it seems like there's a little inconsistency, but at the same time, we're seeing a lot of this from Gord's perspective. So we can't entirely trust the assumptions that are perhaps being made by Gord. And this may not be a contradiction to that earlier statement. It might simply be that Gord, if we're receiving the information from Gord rather than from some omniscient viewpoint, then Gord can easily be wrong about these assumptions about who is, what happened to those early thieves who were enlisted by their beggar master, whether they're still around. The story does not have a great deal of detail or context for a lot of the things that are stated. So we really are never told the exact size of the Beggars Union, the makeup of who are the masters. It had previously said that there were 20 or 21 of these beggar thief masters. And it had seemed that a lot of the beggar thieves being trained were very young, boys and girls, really, more than any kind of an adult. Now, with this, we're also being shown what is happening in the war here. And it also should be noted that something I missed from the last one is that Gord has been moved from his cubicle to a private room. He is a leased master, and it seems like he is now in an area with private rooms that belong to the various masters of the Beggars Union here. All right, now we can see that there is an assassin or several assassins making their way through the Beggars Union within the story right here, and having made it into the mansion and are killing other members of the Beggars Union. All right, I'm going to restart here, and it is page 63, the last paragraph. Further examination of a few more of the apartments told the whole story. Somehow a band of thieves had penetrated the place and set about killing the beggar thieves and beggars inside. Gord felt that it would be a pointless for him to go higher in the building. They had probably started from above, assaulting the beginners and apprentices first, after gaining entry from the rooftop and working their way down. As the least of the masters, Gord had been assigned the smallest room and the one farthest from the stairs. He was most thankful for that. Gord surmised that the man he had slain was the only one left on the floor, the one given the job of cleaning up the last bit of work before moving on. He decided he had better do something fast, for the killers would certainly be finishing the floor below by now, and readying themselves for the final encounter, and settling with Theobald. Great. All right, we're given a little more description of the mansion here. Now, it had been stated at the beginning that there were these cubicles in the upper loft. The upper loft also had seemed to be being used for training. I believe we had worked out that there was about four floors and a cellar and a sub-cellar, and that this would then be, should be around the third floor. So it's hard to tell exactly the structure of the mansion, but it looks like we're going roof, loft, the upper floor, which is kind of an attic area that supposedly was a big open space with cubicles, and it could have been used for both training and for housing the beginners or lower level beggars. It's worth noting here that the beggar thieves and beggars are noted as separate, and in the beginning of the book it was said that the beggars would go out during the day and that they would be bringing in coin, and the beggar thieves would be training during the week and would only go out about twice a week to gain some practical experience and bring in some more coin, and then receive training to make use of the experience they were gaining. And it's left Gord in good stead. He seems to have, he was known as the one who was bringing in the most coin, and he seems to also be the one who's perhaps gained the most experience and utilized it the best. We see how the thieves are methodically going out about slaughtering all of the beggars that are within the mansion, and Gord is assuming that you know, that there is a group of them and working its way on the floor below, which would be more housing on the second floor, would be more housing for the beggars or beggar thieves. All right, I am going to restart. This is page 64, paragraph 2. Gord ran to a secluded back stair that was hardly ever used, and silently bounded down the steps all the way to the bottom, where the passage opened up into the pantry of the kitchen. Gord saw light around the edges of the ill-fitting door that separated the storeroom from the commissary area beyond. Cautiously, he peered through a large crack to see what was going on. There was the gross beggarmaster, lantern in hand, followed by Sam, straining under the weight of a metal box he carried, heading for the concealed entry to the sub-cellar. Gord jerked the door open and stepped out. The suddenness of his appearance made Theobald utter a startled cry, and nearly caused Sam to drop his burden. "What? Oh, it's you, boy. Don't ever do anything like that again, or I'll have you flayed and impaled. Damn your eyes." All that was said in the beggar master's usual falsetto. The threat was real. The fat man took a breath and continued in a slightly more rational tone. "Don't stand there like the fool you are. Help this weakling carry my chest. You must leave now." Gord said nothing and moved quickly to take one of the handles of the iron box from his small friend's grasp. Together they managed its weight easily. The box held between them. The beggar master had moved on ahead to the hidden portal, glancing back a couple of times to make sure that the boys were bringing the chest as he'd ordered. Theobald got the door open and stood aside as the pair struggled through. Then followed, shut the portal, and pulled a bar across it. "There, that should keep them for a bit," he observed. Then he spun to face the two boys again. Fortunate for you two rats that you've survived this debacle. I have been betrayed by none other than the Lord Mayor himself. Drake. All right, well, we've got a little physical description here of the mansion, with the stairs going down from the third floor, I would suspect, down all the way to the cellar where the kitchens are said to be. And, you know, as it says, then from the kitchen, there is a way down to the sub-cellar. And the sub-cellar is, has various places where you can get into the sewers, and you can basically get from there to any place within the city of Greyhawk. The beggar master, his voice is usually a falsetto. He's still the same kind of blustering individual, but still his blusters have a real threat behind him, because he is somebody who would have them killed if he had the power to do so. There's also supposed to be a strength that is, the beggar master is not as weak an individual as he might appear. And that is from a comment earlier on. Now, Sam, who is one of Gord's friends or comrades, is supposed to be about 10 years old, and Gord's 13. Now, San himself is supposed to be about the same size as Gord. San carrying the box himself kind of speaks that maybe this is this iron box is not really all that heavy. And certainly, if he can carry it by himself, and certainly with Gord's help, who is perhaps stronger than he appears to be, is, like it says, easier for them to handle. Now, we know that when they get through the hidden portal, that they do have a way of locking it behind them. And all that goes to detail of the Beggars Union Mansion. So if you're running the campaign, in fleshing out the mansion and mapping it and deciding, here's a little description of the not only the way into the hidden sub-basement, but that also, you know, a little description of how that portal could be blocked from the other side. All right. Now the final thing of any note here, I would say, is that the beggar master Theobald, you know, he tells them at the end that the Lord Mayor himself has betrayed them. So whatever standing Theobald had within Greyhawk society obviously does not measure up to the value of the Thieves Guild. And that at the end here, everything is set up so that the Beggars Union is going to be decimated. And obviously, the Lord Mayor and the directors of the city of Greyhawk are in favor of the Thieves Guild over anything like the rising power of a Beggars Union. All right, I'm going to restart here. It is page 64, last paragraph. Gord nearly snickered aloud at the rage and hurt in Theobald's tone. It seemed incredible to Gord that the fat idiot hadn't expected something like this to happen. What other result could have occurred, given the circumstances and the power of the two quarreling groups? As members of the ruling elite of Greyhawk, surely the thieves counted for far more than the lowly beggars, even with their associated fellows, all of them deserving of whatever vengeance the directors chose to mete out. How could that blubbery clown ever have imagined that a handful of hostages would tip the balance in his favor? It had always been but a matter of time before the guildmaster of thieves and his henchmen would strike. How did you escape? Gord whispered to Sam. I heard a fight in the room next to mine. I ran for my life, Sam whispered back. I stopped to alert the master, and as a reward he made me carry his treasure box," concluded sarcastically, with a cold look in Theobald's direction. Beggar Master did not overhear any of this because he was occupied. He had gone to a corner of the chamber and uncovered the mouth of a hidden well, yet another exit from the place, and one Gord had never seen. All right, well, here Gord spells out just, you know, what I was saying is that there really was no equivalence between the power of the Thieves, Guildmaster of Thieves, who is one of the directors, and Theobald and his Beggars Union. And to Gord, all this was obvious right from the start. And again, there is a certain discernment. I mean, that Gord, here he is a 13-year-old, and yet right from the start, he's had the ability to really see the truth and smart, a thing of his note of his intellectual ability or his wisdom, where he can spot out what is true, even when it's hidden from somebody like Theobald. And it seems like Theobald and his followers just did not have a good picture of the overall situation in the society of Greyhawk, and that the Thieves Guild is members of the ruling elite, and the beggars really are not. And that really tells you, you know, Gord has been just an orphan in the slum quarter, and yet within a few months he has a better overall idea of how the city of Greyhawk functions, and not deluding himself, and the way that Theobald, who's obviously been in power for some time among the beggars, is you know, just has deluded himself. You want to comment? All right, well, we're given here another indication of the physical setup, that the sub-basement leads to the sewers, but here we have this well, which probably leads to another sewer system, but it is something that Gord has never seen before. So we have a secret escape tunnel that is known to Theobald, but not to Gord or Sam. Now, Gord is a leased master, but it might be something that was known to, like, Fergo or this Jank or some of the other masters of the Beggars Union that were mentioned. All right. We have Gord's disrespect and hatred for Theobald. But again, that is something that has been emphasized previously. I'm going to restart here. I just wanted to mention that San also shows these characteristics here. Gord escapes because he notices the fight going on in the next room, and he slays the thief come to kill him. And Sam notices the fight in the next room. It's interesting that San has a room of his own, but here San hears the fight and runs for it, which makes more sense because obviously Gord at 13 and San at 10 are not on equivalent levels of experience and skill. And as Gord had mentioned, that his own fight with the thief was a chancy thing, and if he had not been able to do that surprise backstab, he doesn't think he would have survived it. All right, I'm going to restart here, and this is page 65, paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4, paragraph 5. "In that box here," Theobald grunted. Gord and San complied, then stood waiting for what would happen next. "Put it on the floor, you little oafs," Beggar Master said imperiously. "Can't you see that I need assistance in getting down the first part of this wretched ladder?" He rested the heavy chest on the stone flags as commanded, and helped the obese man to carefully find the first rung of the ladder that descended the side of the shaft. Archibald's pudgy fingers closed around Gord's shoulder, sending pain shooting into his neck, as the fat man nervously felt with his foot for the next step down. "Be careful now, you idiots," he blustered. "One slip is all it takes. It's 100 feet to the bottom of this cistern." When he got low enough, the beggar master released his grip on Gord's shoulder and grabbed the topmost rung of the ladder. Gord watched him slowly continue to climb down, moving forward to see into the shaft. Some 8 or 9 feet below the floor level was a narrow ledge beside the iron rungs, protruding from the stone blocks of the well. The beggar master stepped off the ladder onto this projection, and the light of the lantern that swung from his belt revealed the mouth of a small opening that led off to the side. Theobald looked up at the pair above, once again completely sure of himself. "I suppose I'll save you too. You've been faithful servants and can be useful still." He stretched his arms up and said, "Pass me the chest, and then get your arses down the ladder, and be sure and close the trap door as you come down." Gord motioned Sand to one side, lifted the weight of the iron box by himself, and knelt beside the opening with the coffer in his arms. Beggarmaster peered up expectantly as he saw the coffer come into view. "Give it to me, dolt." Without a word or a glance downward, Gord let the box drop. There was a brief scream, a meaty sound of metal striking flesh, then a long, drawn-out shriek that echoed off the walls of the old well before being cut off by a faint splash. That was the bugger's treasure box, Gord. "It was worth it," said Gord quietly with a smile. Break. End of chapter 6. Now, we're given, like I said, a little physical description that this well, or, you know, a little tavern down to a cistern, is 100 feet down. There's a little side entrance about 10 feet down with a ledge and probably the escape tunnel that Theobald was going to use. There's also, instead of a well cover, there is a trap door at the top. So we have a little more physical description. We have Gord's final revenge on the beggar master, using the iron coffer as a little weapon to land on him and obviously take him off the ladder and down another 90 feet to the bottom of the cistern. We have information that was a treasure box. So we have the physical description, the conclusion, really, to the kind of the conclusion to the beggar thief war, because it sounds like most of the beggar thieves are dead. The Thieves Guild seems to have taken its final revenge, and Theobald the beggar master is slain by Gord, much to the regret of the loss of the treasure box by Sam. All right. I am going to restart. It is page 67, chapter 7, first paragraph. It was a quiet night in the Rock and Elephant. Sometimes the little tavern at the end of Burnbrook Lane would be packed to overflowing. Not this time. Gord was the only customer. The young man sat at the back table where the senior students congregated when they were around, a half-empty pewter flagon of wine before him. He was at ease in the wooden chair, his mind lazily wandering through what had transpired in his life after he had slain the beggar master with his own iron treasure box. He and San had then made haste to get away, taking the side tunnel off the well shaft that the fat tyrant had planned to use for his own escape. They had found a way out, easily enough, for the drain had long been sealed off, and prepared as a route in case flight was ever called for. Thoughtful that fat bastard was, mused Gord. At the far end, near a manhole, they had found a large trunk full of gear stashed for possible need. He and San had both found much usable in its contents, some clothing, a sack to carry it in, materials for use in disguise that they took for later, a pouch containing a pass that allowed unquestioned exit and entry through the various gates of Greyhawk for whoever presented it. Gord wondered about the origin of that benison as they opened the manhole cover and emerged into a closed courtyard. In an abandoned building, once they got into the outdoors, stealing away into the night was a simple matter. Gord had not dared to use the gate pass right away, fearing that its employment by one so young might arouse suspicion as to how it was obtained. It had come in handy several times in the more recent past. Best of all in the booty they had found were the coins hidden in the folds of a leather wallet, and even half dozen each of orbs and plates. Neither lad had ever seen real gold or platinum currency this close up before, and they took a minute or two just to look at them in wonder. Gold orbs were equal to 1,000 bronzes each. The rectangular platinum plates were equal in value to 1,100 Z's, an orb and a lucky combined. Wealth beyond their highest hopes, a great boon indeed. Gord remembered that when he had first held the coins, he could not help but wonder about the fantastic contents of the iron box. Perhaps it hadn't been worth it after all. Well, too late now. First few months afterward had been trying for both of them. They had gone to the firing quarter, supposing that the anonymity afforded them by that sector of the city would allow them to get settled and decide what they should do. Neither was certain if the Thieves Guild was looking for them or not. There could be a price on either or both of their heads for all they knew. The firing quarter had soon proved to be a poor choice. Two small boys, even the lads who appeared competent and wore weapons, were something of a novelty. They were too noticeable. Some thought them prey, others curiosities, and so forth. They moved from place to place, seeking to avoid these unwanted intrusions on their privacy. A shabby inn here, a waterside boarding house there, and even a deserted shanty made into a secret den. Nothing seemed to suffice for long. Compounding their problems, both boys knew they must continue to exercise and practice, even though this ran counter to their desire for seclusion, for neither had a thought about abandoning the pursuit of their skills in the arts and crafts of thievery. Hate the thieves of the city they did, but not their professions. Found themselves forced to give up the foreign quarter when they bungled a job of pocket-picking on some foreigner whom both managed to underestimate. Set up a hue and cry after them as they fled, and the pair were lucky to escape the incident. That night they moved out and into the quarter of craftsmen just beyond the south wall of Old City. The place was safe enough, as long as they kept a very low profile. They stayed in a dull hostel there for about 2 months, hardly ever venturing out. They paid promptly. The ostler didn't ask any questions. However, staying low didn't make for fun. They were young and fun-loving. It wasn't a place to work at thievery either. They did, discreetly a few times, turns were hardly worth the risk and effort. Dreariness and confinement led to pacing and short tempers. After several senseless arguments and exchanges of blows, Gordon San knew that they had to find a real place for themselves in this big city. Break. All right, well, I was hoping to jump to the point where the introduction was located. Because obviously we start at the Rock and Elephant, which is a little tavern at the end of Burn Book Lane. Very nice to have some physical locations to add to our knowledge of the city of Greyhawk. But at the comment about the students which would congregate in the Rock and Elephant, it definitely is not the foreign quarter. It is not the quarter of craftsmen. And I was hoping to get up to the description of the actual detail of which quarter it is. But there's a number of things that have happened here. Besides the information about Gordon Sam, both keeping up their studies as thieves, and also, about their relative skills. They're not completely well-skilled, as they failed on a thieving attempt. And then had to flee the foreign quarter. More about the kind of structure of the city. I'm very interested in the coinage. So the mention of the gold and the platinum, orbs and luckies. Orbs and plates. So now we have, I believe, what is that? The seventh and eighth forms of coinage in the city. Also a physical description that the platinum plates are rectangular coins. The value of them is just a little more than the gold orb, whereas the gold orb is 1,000 bronzes. We actually are also given, because of that, the value of the bronzes and the gold. And the platinum coins, the rectangular coins, we do not know the size. So we really don't know. Part of the value of this kind of coinage is in the metal itself, not just the value that is imposed by the city of Greyhawk, but also the general value of gold or platinum. We learned that Gordon San have never even seen pure gold or platinum. And, here we have an iron drab. So two iron drabs, we learn at the beginning, are good enough for a very poor meal in the slum quarter. And then we have the iron drab, we have the brass bits, then the bronzes. And so we have a... we have then suddenly that we're moving up in these values, and that suddenly one piece of gold is 1,000 bronzes. Now, the bronze is a lower value than a copper, but it is interesting to note that the copper is not being described, the copper common is not being described as the base coin. It seems more important that the bronze in the city of Greyhawk is being mentioned kind of as the lowest functioning currency here. And then we're given equivalents of the gold and the platinum. It really speaks to that this economy that, if a single gold piece is worth 1,000 of these bronzes, which are mentioned as bits that are being gambled with even in more prosperous areas of the city, then gold and platinum are real rarity and hold a great deal of value, which isn't, something that you find in the normal AD&D, where something like, gold and silver, are relatively sneered at. I mean, I think there's mention in some of the books that a gold buys you a cup of ale. But, I mean, in this, obviously, gold is much, much more valuable in this Gygax novel. And so we have Really a very important statement. I don't know how much more consistency we'll see in that. But right now, it shows you that the adventurer in the setting is likely to be much, much wealthier than any common individual. Because if one gold is 1,000 bronzes, it would really seem to set up the most common person in the city for one gold piece to set them up for a good long time, and a platinum piece, you know, gold and platinum, wealth beyond their highest hopes. I mean, that is just amazing that at this point, after being with a beggar master and having gone on expeditions where they are attacking, like where he attacked that Ladadov, who was the assistant guildmaster of thieves, who didn't seem to have any gold on him, obviously, because Gord didn't find it. So that gold and platinum are very heavily valued. We get some idea about the foreign quarter. Now, the thing that I thought was interesting, as they're talking about the foreign quarter, then we're told that they have to leave and they move to a shabby inn, a waterside boarding house, and even a deserted shanty. And it would kind of speak that at this point they've left the foreign quarter and gone back to the waterside or dock area. Now, in the City of Greyhawk map that you find in City of Hawks, the dock area, there is more of a waterway that reaches down and kind of encompasses the south and east side of the city. There is a river is right there. So there may be docks and shanties along that river, as well as along the docks that are shown on the, in the river quarter. Along the Seladon. So it's possible that seeing the location of the foreign quarter, that there may be in the quarter of craftsmen or the foreign quarter, there may be docks that are shown there that are on the east side of the city, as well as the main docks are on the west side of the city. But we really don't know. There's no context. It's simply that they seem to be staying in Old City, or as can be seen, directly south. Now, in Gygax's map, the slum quarter is not adjacent to the foreign quarter. And yet, in the original story, the slum quarter was adjacent to the foreign quarter, and in the earlier part of the book, and that the Petit Bazaar was in the foreign quarter. All right, we have more about the character here of Gordon Sam. They're young and fun-loving, even though it's their safety, they could not put up with living in safety if it was going to be so dull. That they're willing to take risks. They also see that they want to keep practicing their thievery. So both of them, they don't want to just end up living off this wealth as some poor commoner. Gord doesn't want to go back and be that Gord the Gutless in the slum quarter. He's changed too much. And San obviously does not have that characteristic, although we don't know San's origin. But Gord and Sam, neither one of them have the characteristics that are going to let them go back and live as commoners. So they're going to go and be one of the classed individuals. And right now, with that gold and platinum they've discovered, they're very wealthy. All right. Like I said, we got a little description of the craftsman's quarter. Safe and boring from San and Gord's perspective. It's moved out of the danger area of the slum and the beggar and even the thief quarter into an area that seems to be safe and reasonably safe and relegated. It's said it's south of the old city, which is on the City of Hawks, City of Greyhawk map. All right, I'm going to restart here. It is page 69, paragraph 2. Funds were not a problem. It turned out that San also had a reserve of coins he'd managed to sequester. Even without the orbs and plates provided so thoughtfully by Buggermaster Fattybald, the boys had been happily surprised by the size of their combined stacks of coin. The worth of that hoard was nearly 1,000 Z's, and they had augmented their cash by clever applications of their mutual profession, so that they had not been forced to touch their reserve. Though it seemed probable that there was no active search for them, and that no bounty was posted for their heads, they would be in trouble if any thief recognized them. This was very obvious, for there were still few beggars on the streets. Knowing full well what the upper part of Newtown, was closed to the likes of them, they tried to determine what viable territory remained for them to inhabit. After careful discussion and debate, it was agreed that the low quarter, the strip, and the river quarter were not conducive to their continued liberty and life. Either they could remain where they were, perish that suggestion, or try the Clerkburg. And while the latter thought had little appeal, staying put had less. Clerkburg was the district of the bureaucrats and the bookish. The upper end was filled with clerks, administrators, scribes, and the like. For it was near the halls, the government sector of the city, the location of many of its religious edifices as well. The lower portion was given over to the colleges of Greyhawks University, with attendant housing, shops, and minor schools as well. There was no choice other than this, and off the two went as soon as was practical. Great. All right, so we got some nice physical description of the city and some detail of what that these areas are. Now, Newtown is north of the city. Garden Quarter, High Quarter, and obviously a place for the ruling elite. And neither one of them at this point feels comfortable trying to get housing there. The Low Quarter, the Strip, and the River Quarter were described as being, they weren't the headquarters of the Thieves Guild, but at the same time, they were like their base of operations was in the around the Strip, the Low Quarter, and the River Quarter. So obviously, it was also where Gord and San and the mercenaries were plying their attacks on the various thieves. Now, Clerkburg. Is just south of the halls, and the halls is the government sector, interesting enough, also the home of many of the religious areas as well. So temples and churches and such would be up in the halls area, and that kind of suggests that there's also probably among the directors. You would probably find religious leaders of the more powerful followings, the more powerful religions, as part of those running the city. Now, the lower end of Clerkburg is the university area. And in fact, the southern edge of the city on the City of Greyhawks, the City of Hawks Greyhawk map, shows that the university district is actually a large section near this southern wall of the opposite the river quarter, across from the processional and from the main gate, on the main south gate into Greyhawk, and there's the university area. And we have talk that it is the shops, universities, and minor schools. And then we have, that is where Gordon Sam decide to reside. Now, it seems like that wouldn't be, it would be a safe area, but it doesn't seem like it would be much more exciting than the craftsman's area. Although, being the area of the universities and schools, it could be a wealthier area. And if they're thinking of thievery, it could be more rewarding. All right, I'm going to restart here. It is page 70, paragraph 2. As they soon had discovered to their mutual surprise, Clerkburg was a wonder unto itself. Great stone colleges and imposing cathedrals lining the processional hid another world behind them. This area was dotted with mazes of interconnecting buildings, small walled parks, and other such obstructing physical features that formed a second line of defense between the world of academia and the rest of the city. Inside Clerkburg were hundreds and hundreds of students, many of them nearly as young as Gordon Sand. This was just the place for them. All right, now, in the city of Greyhawk, City of Hawks, City of Greyhawk map, the university district is a separate feature. But it seems like in the description here, it's more or less being described as the southern section of Clerkburg. We're also given information here that the cathedrals and the great colleges lined the processional. And behind them are the smaller buildings, like they said, walled parks, and you know, other features that are associated with the centers of learning and religion back here. Now, what's very interesting is that we're told that this has hundreds and hundreds of students, and the city of Greyhawk has a large size. But it's very interesting that there is an educated elite of such size within the city. So it is not just, it has its aristocratic elite, it has its very low sections, it has its worker sections, but it also has this intellectual academic elite that is part of the varied social structure of the city. And Gordon and Sand's reaction is that this is a place of wonder. It's something that they hadn't suspected themselves. So that the lower, the commoner, the people who are the beggars and perhaps the thieves, they're really not used to this world of academia that exists within the city of Greyhawk. All right, I'm going to restart right here. It is page 70, paragraph 3. It was an easy matter to find an out-of-the-way place to stay. Their new digs, as they later learned to call their chambers, were in an ancient inn called the Acorns, near the great wall that surrounded the new city. Their host, Calvert, an elderly, red-faced man full of good humor and jokes, told them that his family had run the inn since before the wall was extended to encompass it. A narrow stone stairway led up to the rooms above the ground floor, which contained the bar, the dining room, the kitchen, and the hostler's own apartment. Gordon Sand arranged to take the attic above the guest floor, and although it needed attention, they were delighted with it. Not only was it large and complete with several windowed gables, but a gnarled oak lifted its stout branches from the rear yard to the windows that looked over it, an unobtrusive means of egress and entry whenever they wished to go undetected. The rent was 1 copper common a week, 4 a month if they paid that way in advance. Gord had paid a month's price immediately. They had stayed there at the Acorns ever since. Could it truly be almost 3 years already? All right, break. Now, I mean, one of the most significant things here is the passage, I think, of time. There's a nice little description of here about the inn, about what to expect, you could expect in Clerkburg, and about information of the development of the city. But in story, it's there's always interest when they're talking about the passage of time. So in between the end of Theobald and the Beggars' Union War, 3 years have passed. So now Gord should be 16 and Sand should be about 13. So they've both moved. And at this point, 16 within the city would seem to be making Gord very much an adult rather than a youth anymore. It doesn't mention any kind of physical change, but it does. This passage of time is quite a jump forward in the story, which before had jumped about 4 or 5 months from Gord being from the workhouse in the beginning of the story to the Beggars Thieves Guild War, and then a few months with them after it immediately, and now we're jumped ahead that it is 3 years. 3 years have passed.
Yeah, this is the biggest jump so far.
Oh yes, it's a very it also kind of implies that the events happening at this point haven't been such noteworthy. That they haven't been so life changing. In a sense that the events in 3 years aren't detailed, and that we jump ahead so far.
Yeah, they're laying low and practicing their craft, and they didn't get caught, which is good.
Now, besides the description, I like the description of the Acorns here, the ancient inn, and truly an ancient inn, because obviously when this area was the new city, the great outer wall, so this inn is old enough to have known when it was only the old city. And then the buildings that were exterior to that wall, before this massive, and according to Gygax, this is a massive wall for the new city. And so this is a very ancient building here. It doesn't necessarily mean that there was the processional or the halls or anything else. All that probably existed among the old city in various sections, and then were abandoned when the new city became the place to live and to be, and the protective wall was finally built around it. And I find that very interesting, and that the Acorn still existed with enough of an open space to have a rear yard with the large tree in the back of it. It does give you a physical description of the several floors, the first floor, the several floors of the inn. And then finally, we're also a little mention about what is the economy of Greyhawk. This is a relatively nice place. I mean, here they are within Clerkburg, which is just south of the government centers. The areas where the students and the big universities and the cathedrals are, and Gord and San are only paying 4 copper commons every month to stay there. And I mean, that means that at this point, the buying power of this low, low level coinage, it really does not reflect the 1E. The 1E purchasing power stated in the game books, because you're not going to be able to buy a glass of wine for a copper common normally,
right.
And here they're staying in a decent have the whole top floor of a decent inn
For a month.
Yeah, and they're paying 4 copper commons a month. Yeah, and that just tells you. And it had mentioned before that also they had been able to live off their thieving earnings without even touching the gold and the platinum and their own savings that they had gathered up during their time with the Beggar Master. So, the levels of value in these coins and the difference between the very poor and commoners in the city and the elite is going to be huge. All right. I am going to... at this point, we're at 6:55. I think before going any further, I'm going to end it here. Mainly because with that 3-year jump ahead, we have really entered into some new ideas about both Gord and San, and obviously we're going to hear a lot more about different areas of the city of Greyhawk. So here we have, it all summed up where that time of Gord's life as the gutless Gord and the orphan and the 12, 13-year-old, that is really the past. And from here on, we're going to see a different phase, I believe, of Gord and of San. And more information about areas outside of Old City. And I think that this is, even though this is within the chapter, I think this is a real dividing mark between the story right here. Now, we can, at this point, look back at that first paragraph that talks about Gord and San sitting in the Rock and Elephant, which is obviously a tavern within this Clerkburg area. And again, that this city does not quite match up with the city of Hawk's map. Obviously, some of it does. Some of it seems to have changed, even in the telling of this story so far, because the physical descriptions aren't really tallying, exactly. Like, we get the slum quarter, and you look at the city of Hawk's maps, and it is not, there are, other quarters that are immediately the labor quarter. And I just would think we see the brewer's quarter, the labor quarter, the thieves' quarter, and all those areas are... they're all removed from the foreign quarter. And where the initial description was that the edge of the slum quarter would probably be the laborer quarter. And instead, on the City of Hawks map, that is a very large area. The foreign quarter is a very large area. We do have matching placements for like the craftsman's
quarter. About a third of Old City, right? The foreign quarter. About a third of Old City?
Yes, easily a third of Old City. And at, what is it, an inch is 1 mile, or is an inch 3 miles? I believe an inch,
three miles.
Then that is, it's hard to tell, but that is obviously a few miles across. And the laborer's quarter is, fairly wide across, and the thieves' quarter. I think that there are some changes from Saga of Old City to City of Hawks. And we'll see when we eventually get to City of Hawks how he describes that. At that point, the descriptions in City of Hawks and the other knight-errant books, like the book Knight Errant, which describes several streets and inns in the story Twistbucks game, that should be matching up with the map that we're seeing in City of Hawks, Greyhawk City. And I think that that map was not fully developed when this was written. It would be very interesting to see if there had been a sketch map of what Gygax was thinking when he wrote Saga of Old City. And I'd love to see that. But I think at this point, you know, like the only thing I really have access to, and the thing that matches up mostly and far better than the City of Greyhawk box set, is the map at the front of City of Hawks.
Right. Even though there's still some anomalies.
Yes. But there's far, I mean, this is far more in keeping the City of Hawks map with what we're being described here. And I think the anomalies from the City of Greyhawk post-Gygax era set, they're much greater, much, much greater in size and composition of the city. I know that a lot of people have taken the vast amount of information about names and quarters, names of streets and inns and quarters, and tried to match them.
Yeah.
That box set. They're apples and oranges. I just don't think it has. They're very nice flavor having these streets, but those street names, even from here and the areas and locales, they are meant for this kind of map, and not the much, much smaller box set City of Greyhawk. All right. Well, we're at 7:01. I'm going to end the recording right here. I believe recordings number 1 through 8 are already archived, so that if you want to listen to previous recordings, you can get on the Cannon Fire website and listen to the previous recordings that we've done, and that seems to be going pretty well as far as them going up. This is the end of recording number 9.
Nice.
Well, maybe I didn't do that right.
Oh.
1 second here. I must have typed in the wrong command. Oh. No, did I?
Still recording.
Yes.